It's time for another episode of Just a Bit Outside with your hosts, Stark and Massaro.
Way back, Blue Jays win it! Touch the ball, Joe! Brett Favre! Touchdown, Green Bay! Bless you, boys! What a game!
We are live! It's the summertime edition of Just a Bit Outside. And we have lots of great sports to discuss, including Lord Stanley is handed out. The Blue Jays pitching is in trouble. Xander pulls off a win at the Travelers. College football has a big announcement. And the NHL awards and offseason begins. But first, Mike, how was your week?
Well, more consistency on the golf course. But one part of the game needs some attention. So played Sunday morning. I was bombing the driver. So it's been good, very consistent, very pleased. My putting, on the other hand, complete opposite.
Will Zalatoris?
Yeah. I think I've supported him so much, I've kind of inherited his putting issues, it would seem. But a lot of opportunities for birdie or par that turned into not birdies and pars.
But you're getting those opportunities,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Which is way better than your bogey shot chipping onto the green. Give yourself a chance, right?
Exactly. I was playing well on Sunday, back nine, pretty good. And then I had, one of maybe two errant tee shots on the day and, finished with a par on 18, but 16 and 17 were something to forget. So it's good. We exchanged some texts over the weekend just about when you play regularly and you start playing better, it's obviously more enjoyable.
Yeah. And you start to repeat shots that you've done when you start playing more regular.
Right.
You're like, okay, 130, I got to use this club or a half a swing of this club. And you got to start thinking about shots. And you're like, I've done this, I can do it. And you start really narrowing in on your focus on your shots.
Yeah. So aside from the golf for me, I'm all in on F1.
Oh,
like completely in.
Do you have a big announcement for us?
Oh yeah. Well, I signed with Aston Martin, so super excited about that. But
that's great.
Nah, it was something, everybody, you were telling me, Clay was telling me, other buddies, you got to watch a series. And, watching the race last week in Montreal, I enjoyed it, but then you watch the Drive to Survive series on Netflix.
Yeah.
And they do such a phenomenal job of, I'm still almost done season two. I know a lot has changed between now and then, like the creation of Aston Martin, but it's just so well done and so easy to watch episodes, and it's really been enjoyable. So I'm all in on F1.
I would be interested to see. It's a great show, but it's a great marketing ploy as well. And I know the PGA Tour is doing it, and I'll be interested to see how that goes. Obviously, with everything going on in the golf world this year, it should be interesting. But for me, I love watching the F1 show, but it hasn't translated into me watching the races on Sunday.
Mm.
So okay. I'm curious, is how many people did they get now as fans of just the reality show, or fans that converted into watching the race or attending races? And I'm sure those numbers are very, very high, but for me, it's more following the show. So what I almost find myself doing is trying not to see the highlights from the races or find out who wins specific races, because I want to wait until next year's Drive to Survive to see how it's going to end. Like, I know how I'm on the newest season four. I know how it ends already because it was the biggest story in F1 about the two guys coming down to the end and coming to the last race and the controversy with the race official and then him getting fired. So all that's coming, I know, in the season finale of this season, but I kind of wish I didn't have it. So I wonder, is there ever a way, or is there ever going to be a time where they start releasing episodes right after races? So like the Montreal race happens and then it's over on Sunday, and then by Tuesday night is that episode airs about the previous week.
Having been a part of that world, contributing nothing other than granting access, that is a heavy turnaround.
And but the Winter Classic NHL did it.
Okay, well, that's a one-off.
Remember the HBO show? Oh, no, HBO show. They did. They followed the teams for a month, and every week a new episode came out about the previous week until they played the outdoor game, and then you had the final episode.
Well, if you're giving them a week, sure. But you're talking about race on Sunday, and then you want to watch it on Tuesday.
But the whole lead up is the whole week, right? The whole lead up to the race and how they do it. I get it. It would work.
It takes a little time to edit things.
Still, great show.
Oh, fantastic. So, yeah, I'm in.
Great. Good to hear. I'm in too, but I'm not picking teams.
Okay.
I'm staying neutral. I like the way it kind of bounces around a bit, and you'll see as you get on with the seasons and how some of the teams drastically change, right?
Right.
I had an unbelievably interesting golf round that I need to talk about. I was lucky enough that I was able to get out and just play nine holes on Friday afternoon, and it was great. Teed off. I had a tee time, but it was a little bit later, and I was like, I just want to get these nine holes in and then go pick my kids up from school. So the club was like, hey, you know, if you see someone going around to the back nine, jump on the back nine. So I see a gentleman who's a longtime member who I know, and I say to him, hey, Bob, you mind if I join you? And he's like, yeah, no problem. I got my son with me. He was probably around my age as well. And I join up with them. Now we get to the 10th tee, and they're playing from the tips. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to play with you guys. I'm not going to be that guy that moves up a tee or whatever it may be. So I joined them on the tips. Hit my first shot, ends up on the fairway bunker, like on a lip, and I smashed this 5-iron right into the heart of the green. It was unbelievable. And I was like, holy smokes. So I end up going par 10, par 11, par 12, par 13, par 14, birdie 15. I got three holes left. I'm one under, and I have to pick my kids up in 45 minutes. I bogey 16, and then par 17, par 18. I play nine holes in even par, and I shake Bob's hand, and he's like, even par? I'm like, yeah. Like, so he was obviously following along as well, and he's like, unbelievable. He's like, good luck when you go play the front nine. I'm like, I'm not going to play the front nine. I'm leaving to go get my kids from school because the bell's going in 10 minutes. I got to get my butt over there or my wife's going to kill me. It was too late to get anyone else to pick them up. So I gave up the chance of playing 18 holes, even par, because I had to go get my kids.
That's impressive from the tips. So are you going to be playing from the tips moving forward, do you figure? No.
No. Me and all my buddies play from the middle ones, and it's more beneficial to our handicaps and speed and all that. It's a different look from an extra 20, 30 yards per hole back, but yeah, not my cup of tea, but I did it. I can hang my hat and say I shot even par, nine holes from the tips, loved it. Yeah, if I had gone, you know what? If I had made arrangements or said, screw it, my kids can just stand in the schoolyard by themselves for an extra couple hours, I probably would have double bogeyed the first hole when I made the turn. So it was probably smart not to do it.
And divorced shortly and thereafter. Divorced. So probably made the right decision, Stark.
Right decision. Yep, right decision. Good parenting. So, hey, stick around. We got our T5 coming up right after the break. Lots of good stories to discuss. So we'll be right back after this. I still get chills when I see the players rush onto the ice at the end of the game knowing they are Stanley Cup champs. And that will be our T1. The Colorado Avalanche are your 2022 Cup champs after beating the Lightning in Game 6 on Sunday night. The series was tight, the playoffs were long, but Colorado proved they were the best team and found a way to win. Mike, are you happy for the Avs?
I am. You know, we've talked about it in the past throughout the playoffs here, and they've been the best team for a long time, or certainly amongst the best teams for a long time. And if you look back, I mean, in 2018, prior to that, 6 years from today, they were the worst team in hockey.
Yeah, 45 or 48 points, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, not even 50 points. 2018, they got back into the playoffs and have kind of built themselves towards this run. And they've had a couple disappointing early exits the past couple years. But this year they got it done. And, you know, it was a fitting end, I think, with the team that was on the ascension, in the Colorado Avalanche playing a team that was looking for the first three-peat since the early 80s in the Tampa Bay Lightning. Yeah, a fitting end to a good playoff series. I think you could easily argue the two best teams pound for pound were in the final, and Colorado deservedly takes home the cup, which, like we said, they've been building towards and thoroughly deserved.
Yeah, to answer the first question, I think I am happy for the Avalanche. You want to see star players. You want to see players that have been around a while win a Stanley Cup. So you can say, yeah, that guy's a Stanley Cup champion. He got that piece. If it's only once, so be it. But at least to be able to get to the dance and win one is huge. And a guy like Nathan MacKinnon, I'm happy for. We all saw that press conference where he was really upset and said, I haven't won shit in the NHL in my 8 years here. And that was a motivational factor all season, this season long. And they were a top team and they got two great lines, a strong defense and okay goaltending, but they were able to figure out a way to win all season, all playoffs, and even particular in the Stanley Cup finals against, we're going to say, one of the best teams of all time in the Tampa Bay Lightning, who put up a good battle and maybe caught a bad break, let's call it, in game four with the Kadri goal in overtime. Too many men, so be it. But that happens all the time, at least 10 times a game when guys are changing and one's a little bit too far ahead. And what's the ref supposed to do? Call too many men in overtime and give Tampa Bay a power play? Because that would be talked about just as much as people were talking about the too many men on the ice. So I'm happy for Colorado to get this win, get this cup. Haven't won in 21 years, which for Leafs fans doesn't seem that long ago. But I'm sure for Avs fans who went through a tough time after those Sakic and Forsberg and Waugh years and their teams were struggling and they weren't that good and maybe attendance wasn't great and there was other things going on. And then you have Patrick Waugh, the coach, and then he just bails on the team 3 weeks before training camp. But they were able to pull it together and make a superstar type of team. They added the right pieces, Joe Sakic and his front office, adding Kadri and adding some of these guys. And I'm happy to see them win and raise the cup. I thought it was great.
Yeah, for sure. Cale Makar, maybe, well, you know, arguably the best defenseman, which, well, he won that. But a Conn Smythe winner, thoroughly deserved, 29 points in 20 games is outstanding. He's such a good player. But nice to see some of the older guys that have been around the league, on the team. Some guys were later additions, you know, Eric Johnson, Jack Johnson, Andrew Cogliano, guys that are into their 30s that have been in the league a long time. They get their cup. But, you know, maybe you can speak more to this, but off the top of my head, and taking nothing away from Darcy Kemper, he's a good goaltender, but he finishes the playoffs with a save percentage under 900 and a goals against average almost at 2.7, which, you know, I think is a little, is something you don't typically see in a championship team. Again, he's a good goaltender, but those numbers, I mean, the Avalanche team carried them through, obviously. They didn't really have to rely on goaltending a whole lot, Stark.
Yeah, and the Lightning are a team that really starts from the goaltender out. And if we think back the last three Stanley Cup champions, two in Tampa Bay, one in St. Louis with Binnington, who was just playing lights out that year. And the NHL is a copycat league, as most are. And teams were like, we need a stud goalie. We need a stud goalie. Well, the Colorado Avalanche just showed you don't need one. I mean, stud, forget it. This guy was under 900 save percentage, as you mentioned. That's not good at all. And there was question marks if he was even going to be the game one starter in the Stanley Cup because of his so-so play and because of injuries. And Pavel Francouz was playing decent. So there's going to be teams now saying, hey, listen, if I stack my front, have a decent back end of strong guys that can shut things down, I can find a tandem to play in net and we have a serious chance of winning. And there's lots of teams that are going to have to do that now as the cap isn't moving and money's going to be spent on these top players to produce and score goals. And the goalies aren't going to see the love anymore. Now, yes, would you like to see Vasilevskiy as your goalie? Yeah. And that was the thing that I kept saying is, if Tampa Bay can win this at home, that game five win was massive. They can win game six at home, and you're going to a game seven with Vasilevskiy against Kemper, you're going to take Vasilevskiy every yeah. single time.
Absolutely.
So don't get me wrong in saying, hey, don't have a good goalie. I would prefer a really good goalie, a Vezina caliber goalie, a Hall of Fame world-class goalie like Vasilevskiy, but there's not many of them out there. So having a mixed mash of goaltending that can hold it together and just go all offense seems like it might be the way of the future. The Oilers almost did it too. The other thing I want to talk about was the cup celebration. It is the best in sports. I was saying it to my wife as we were watching it on Sunday night. It's the only sport championship, and I'm talking the four major sports here in North America, where the players get to celebrate together at the end of the game for at least a decent amount of time. They're all together in the corner, hugging, jumping up and down. Then they go shake hands. Then they get back together. Now the front office comes on, and they have that 20 minutes of each of them getting to share the cup and skate around with it. And then family and media all come on the ice and into the dressing room. The NFL, as soon as that horn goes to the Super Bowl, the confetti drops, you can't even see players on the field. It is so crammed with random people all out there, not to mention the sidelines. NBA, same thing. They got to push through players to get and give a hug to another teammate. Major League Baseball, they get that 20 seconds maybe right there at the pitcher's mound as they jump on, and then it's media and everyone's pulling them away. Because of the rink and the boards, NHL is the only place those guys get to spend that time together. And the scary thing to think is it's their last 20 minutes ever together, because no team ever repeats as the exact same lineup anymore. And those guys get that 20 minutes of on the ice, passing that cup around. One of the best traditions. And I said it in the opening, it gives me chills. I recorded it. I showed it to my boys this morning. There is nothing better than the Stanley Cup celebration of passing that cup around. You think that you had a bad week? The Blue Jays lost both series and have lost their lead on the wild card, and that will be our T2. Toronto's pitching troubles continue as they drop 4 of 6 this week and allow at least 4 runs in every game. Their schedule does not get any easier, and they will now need to turn this ship around as they enter July. Mike, are you starting to worry there are some issues with this team?
Yeah, I think, you know, the pitching, which has been so consistent to start the season, is starting to show some cracks. You know, now there's more injuries. Garcia, Richards, Merriweather, all in the bullpen, are all injured now. That's an issue. Ross Stripling has become your third best starter right now. And credit to him, he's been pitching well. And the start of this week, Boston comes in for 3, and then there's 5 games against Tampa. So they have 8 games in 7 days. Starting this week with Gausman, Stripling, Manoah, probably your top 3 guys right now. Then there's some question marks into the latter part of the week with Tampa coming in. Who's going to pitch? Kikuchi has been pretty poor in his 5 starts in the month of June thus far. 3 losses, 2 no decisions. Barrios had a rough week last week, losing to the White Sox and to the Brewers. He lasted just over 6 innings and gave up 14 earned runs in 2 starts last week. So things are starting to affect the team. 12-12 in the month of June. You know, the lineup has been still competing, but the pitching is not giving us a ton. And it just goes back to what I said last week. I think they got to pull a trigger on a deal, bring in somebody, whether it's a starter or a reliever now, where there is a need that they need to address immediately and not wait till the deadline.
This has not been a successful year for the Toronto Blue Jays. It's been our talents are able to get us through enough type of year, but the expectations were way better than this, and the team has not produced. Offensively, definitely not. The guys are not near as slugging like we thought they were going to be, that team that just bombs balls and scores a ton of runs. Yeah, we see it occasionally, but it hasn't been consistent. It has not been what the Yankees are doing. And the Blue Jays, yeah, 40-32. Great record. Great record. But they're 12 and a half games back of the Yankees, and they can't even think about the Yankees now because they're tied with the Rays and they're behind the Red Sox in their own division. And you don't want to be that last wild card team just to limp in, and you got to have better pitching. The pitching was holding it together at the start of the year to make it an okay start to the season while the offense was struggling. The offense gets a little bit hot, and now the pitching's struggling. They're getting injured, and they're not pitching well at all. Something needs to be addressed right now. They cannot wait. The front office time of saying, hey, let's give it another week and see how things turn out. Maybe Stripling can get hot. Maybe Kikuchi can find something. It's over. You can't do that anymore. You need to make a move now for some starting pitching. What you're going to give up, that's going to be the tough part, because I think to get one of those top three pitchers that are out there, the guys you've mentioned before, Mike, you're going to have to give something up that you're going to say, damn, I wish we had it able to keep that piece. So I'm worried about what they're giving up, but it's more important that they save this season and they do it now.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, you an outsider can look at it and say 40-32, you're 8 games above 500. You know, we're still a few weeks away from the All-Star break, and we've kind of touched on, you know, you want to be 500 around that time of year. But like you said, I think right now, just forget about the Yankees. They're on a pace where they're kind of on their own, what they're doing. But I mean, Boston now, you know, they come into this week, 7-game winning streak, 19-4 in the month of June. I think I read something, they haven't lost a series since losing to the Jays in April, which seems like a long time ago now. So, you know, hopefully these things get worked out now. I'd rather them go through this period at this point of the year and then, you know, have things up and running at full speed for, you know, hopefully positioning wise for August, September.
Yeah. The one shining spot on the team right now is our boy, Alejandro Kirk, who is mashing the ball. Looked like he hurt his hand on a check swing or a swing back and hit him on the catching hand, but he was fine. Came out 3-run homer on Sunday. He's hitting the ball great. He's playing great. He's going to be an all-star, which is wild to think. But my question is, could he be trade bait? Could he be the guy that they maybe send out there to get that pitcher? Because, you know, you got the catching depth with Moreno and possibly Jansen coming back at some point. Is Kirk the guy that you're like, hey, he is at his ceiling right now, and this isn't going to sustain itself, and we're not signing him to a long-term agreement. Maybe now's the time to trade him. It would be sad because he's playing so good, and he's going to be a Blue Jay at the All-Star game, but I don't know. I don't know, Mike. What do you think? Do you think he might be one of the guys on the way out?
What's that old saying, buy low, sell high, or whatever?
Yeah.
I mean, yes, that's the thing, right? Like, you know, do you consider doing something like that? Maybe. You're not going to depart with Moreno. And Danny Jansen is a valuable catcher. And, you know, that would be a hell of a 1-2 punch. That's the thing. You know, to give something, you have to, or to get something, you have to give something up, right? And maybe that's the route they go. I don't know. The one thing that would help, you know, with the bats that they do have in the lineup, you may be able to, you know, cushion the blow of losing an Alejandro Kirk if that was the direction, right? With the pieces they do have on offense. So, interesting times. But look, I mean, at the end of the day, they're 8 games above 500. They're in a playoff spot right now. I think we paint a picture that's actually, you know, not as bad as it may seem. So, you know, hopefully better days ahead this week and a big week with, you know, 8 divisional games in front of us.
Winning on the PGA Tour is tough, especially when it's your first win and you have the lead on 18, and that'll be our T3. Xander Schauffele picked up the win on Sunday at the Travelers Championship with a birdie on the 72nd hole. But it was Sahith Tagala who double bogeyed 18 with the lead to throw it away. Mike, I know you're happy for Xander, but does your heart break for Tagala?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the second time this season it's happened, right? The Phoenix Open, he was right there. until the 17th, and I think he put it in the water there in Phoenix. So he's knocking on the door. You know, his time is going to come soon because he has been playing well this year. But, you know, Xander kind of had it in cruise control, if you will, had the lead, and then let it slip a bit here on Sunday. Thigala was playing well. JT Potson as well was playing well. I think he shot something like 64 on Sunday to put himself right up there. So just disappointing that Thigala, you know, let it slip away and had the mistake on 18, which was costly, and it allowed Schauffele to pick up his second win of the year, sixth of his career, and you know, gives him a bit of a boost heading into the Open Championship later next month. But as we get into the thick of things here, progressing forward for the FedEx Cup standings and that race as well in the next couple months.
Thigala just looks like a nervous golfer to me. So remember, this is like a rookie season for him. Technically, he's not even a PGA Tour member. He's kind of been getting by on sponsors exemptions and getting into some of these events. You mentioned the Waste Open getting right to the near the end, almost winning it. And then this one as well. He's making good money. He's getting points, all those great things. But having that win would have been massive for him. Locked in his tour card for sure for the next couple of years. Got him into the match. Masters, all those things are going in his head on the 18th tee. He pulls that driver, puts it in the bunker, and it just doesn't roll down enough to give him the opportunity to get it up. And then the conversation starts happening between him and his caddy, where I'm watching it thinking the caddy needs to jump in that bunker, grab him and say, punch out to the side, chip on and give yourself a par putt. We just talked about it with you, Mike. Give yourself an opportunity at a par putt. But he tries to get it up. And even if he got it up and out of that on the first shot, it's only going 20, 25 yards in front of you. You're still chipping on. So why not just chip out to the side? Completely screwed himself and got stuck in the bunker. And we're seeing it now. PGA Championship with Pereiro. These guys are feeling the pressure coming down with the lead. I don't want to get into a PGA Tour versus LIV discussion right now, but that's the difference between the PGA Tour and LIV. You're going to feel that pressure knowing and looking at the leaderboard. I got the lead. Money's on the line. All the stuff's on the line. There's no pressure in LIV. Plus, you're doing a shotgun. So you could be, as I mentioned, on the fifth hole, not even knowing what's going on the 18th or 14th or 12th, wherever the leader is. And you're just, ho-hum, I'll just take my par here. And hey, when I get back to the clubhouse, maybe I'll be the winner. Thigala knew the situation and he blew it. He choked himself away. But good for Xander. He's one of those forgotten young guys that has potential to be a superstar, has potential to be a major winner, just hasn't got a ton of wins going in the right direction for him. So hopefully this starts pushing him and people start talking about him for majors, big moments in Ryder and President's Cup, the FedEx Cup, all that stuff. It should be in his future now.
Yeah, for sure. Just shifting gears to the women's tour. NG Chung won the KPMG Women's PGA Championship, the third major of her career. It was funny. She shot 75 Saturday and Sunday. And like they said, you typically don't shoot 75s on the weekend and win a major. But it was a case of the field just struggling a bit. Lexi Thompson finished second, along with Minji Lee, who won the previous major U.S. Open. Both losing by one stroke. Chun actually had a 6-shot lead after 36 holds, which was something like the biggest on the LPGA in over 20 years for a major. Lexi Thompson, 2-shot lead hanging into 14. Then she bogeyed 3 of the last 5 holes and let it slip away, which got Chun her third major, as we mentioned. And Brooke Henderson tied for 16th with a +1. So Brooke was up there in the top 20. Good to see. But, you know, another exciting major on the LPGA has come and gone now. And it was the U.S. Senior Open as well. So it was like a major weekend outside of the PGA anyway.
Yeah, the only thing I'll mention is Lexi Thompson, great golfer, obviously. Hits the ball amazing off the tee. Great irons from fairways. Around the green, she is yippy. and you cannot trust her chipping. You can't trust her putting, and that's been her downfall. That's been her woes, and I'm sure she's kicking herself on, why does this happen to me in massive moments of my career? So tough one for her. Hopefully she can bounce back again and try to get herself in that spot, but it's tough to get yourself back in a chance to win a major every single year. In this topic, we will discuss a kid in grade 11. Yes, Arch Manning will be our T4. This past week, the number one quarterback recruit for the 2023 college football season decided he would take his talents to Texas. As the nephew of Peyton and Eli Manning, chooses a path a little bit different than the rest of his family. Mike, do you like this spot for Arch Manning?
I love it. As a college football fan, and no offense, Stark, I was pleased to see him pick another school other than Alabama or Georgia, right? And I think in this new NIL world, and he doesn't have a deal yet, I'm sure that's coming. But, you know, I think it brings a lot more schools into play. And the way they went about this was, you know, not much press was given from their side. Decision was made. He had three official visits, I think, over the course of the last month with Texas, Bama, and Georgia, and ultimately decided to go to Texas. And I read a couple great articles on The Athletic just talking about that process. And it seemed like Coach Steve Sarkisian and their quarterback coach, AJ Milwee, really did a good job of connecting with Arch, building a relationship, selling them on, you know, what the future is going to look like at Texas. Because, I mean, if we look back in the standings, they were a 5-7 team last year. And they also have Quinn Ewers there, who was a highly touted number one overall recruit from Texas that decided to go to Ohio State, has since transferred to the Longhorns for this season. So I think it's, you know, it's been a very exciting story to follow, and you know, a great get by Texas. It seems like they're doing a lot of really good things with the recruitment classes over the past couple of years as they try to rebuild the program, I guess we could say, and prepare for life in the SEC in the next couple of years.
This is a professional sports family. They know exactly what they're doing, and they know how to do it properly. You mentioned not a lot of fanfare from him. It wasn't some crazy video. It wasn't, you know, plastered all over social media. It was just a small announcement. Hey, this is what I'm planning on doing, and that's it. No mention about nil, no mention about money, nothing like that. Just this was the best route for him. And good for this kid. I'm happy for him. You know why? His grandfather obviously was a stud at Ole Miss. His uncle Eli was a stud at Ole Miss. His other uncle Peyton went to Tennessee and kind of went a different path than the other two. And this was his way of saying, I'm going to go do my own thing. And this organization, this school, is the perfect fit for me now. Not some heritage, tradition, situation at another school where I have to go there because of my last name. So good for him that he took the time, looked at a bunch of different schools, and made the right choice. This is great for college football. College football wants Texas to be good, and they want them to be in the spotlight because football in Texas is king. And this is a school that hasn't been good since, what, Vince Young, I guess, was there, right?
Yeah.
So they need a star, which they're going to get now, and they need to be relevant. The only thing I feel bad about is that they're moving to the SEC now. So they're losing out. They're just clumping themselves together with Bama and Georgia, and those will be great rivalries and great games to watch. Don't get me wrong. But I feel like it's losing the luster of the other conferences now, because it would have been great if he was a star player in a different conference and really built up the team in that conference. And finally, we get to the national championship and we get to see Texas against Bama or Georgia or Florida, whatever it is. But now they're all just grouped together. So it's making me like that transfer to the SEC a lot less.
Well, I mean, you never know. Look at this past year, Georgia and Bama, the stars aligned and they were in the final, right? So you never know what's going to happen. And with expanded playoffs potentially down the road in the future, whatever that's going to look like, that could, you know, maybe add a few more teams to the mix. But no, I think you said it. You know, it's great for college football. It's going to be really exciting. And I mean, Texas has to be, you know, over the moon. I mean, you got Quinn Ewers for this season, maybe a second season. And then you got Arch Manning coming in. So the quarterback position is good in the Lone Star State.
And you mentioned it. He still has another year of high school left. So is there a chance that this time next year we're hearing that, oh, you know what? Actually, maybe I'm going to LSU, or maybe I'm going to USC, or maybe I'm going to Wisconsin. You never know. You never know.
That'd be all right. No, I don't see that being the case here. I think, you know, that he's made up his mind, and you know, we'll go from there.
I hope so. The Cup is now in Colorado, but the big decisions for the other 31 teams start now, and that will be our T5. Auston Matthews won the Hart Trophy as the league MVP, while other teams secured new head coaches. Monday will be the start of GM week as NHL free agency and the draft will get ready to start. Mike, your thoughts on the award winners for the 2022 season?
Yeah, I think the awards, we touched on the earlier ones that were announced over the course of the playoffs, but the ones that were handed out the other night, I don't think there's anything to debate there. Maybe Markstrom for the Vezina over Shesterkin, but Shesterkin, you know, beat him significantly, I think, in the vote. So there's no real surprise of the winners. Auston Matthews deservedly gets the Hart and the Ted Lindsay Award. You know, Cale Makar, Norris winner. And that was really the top three, Makar, Roman Josi, and Trevor Hedman, you know, three best defensemen in the league. And like I said, I think the most deserving winners got their awards.
Yeah, I would say, you know, for me, diehard Leafs fan, Auston Matthews winning the Hart Trophy was huge, enormous. What an accomplishment. What a season. I get it. The playoffs did not go as planned. But let's just look at the regular season, because that's what this award is for. He is the first Maple Leaf to win the Hart Trophy since Ted Kennedy in 1955. And the crazy thing is, Ted Kennedy wasn't even the leading scorer on the Leafs that season. So I don't know what was going on with the voting there, but Auston Matthews, clearly the best player in the league this year. He also won the Ted Lindsay Award, which is voted on by the players, and to me is almost a bigger award than the Hart Trophy. But either way, winning this is huge for him. He's got the Calder, he's got the Ted Lindsay, he's got the Hart Trophy. Now he knows what he needs next, and that's the Stanley Cup. I just talked about it with Nathan MacKinnon. These superstar players need that cup on their trophy mantle. And that's what's next for Auston Matthews. So I'm good. He's got this, but let's start thinking about what's next and what's ahead for him. And I think he's determined for that. You could tell he was happy that he won. He was happy to get up there and get the awards, but he knew it was a disappointing year because it didn't really come to success in the playoffs. So I'm hoping that this builds him and motivates him even more. You mentioned the other two awards, Vezina, of course, Igor Shesterkin. Makar for Norris was actually a surprise. Josi was way up there in points, leading for defensemen. So I thought it was going to go to him because he had a great year. And sometimes they like to give this trophy out as like a legacy award. Like, oh, it's your turn. Here you go. They've done it before with Drew Doughty and a couple others, Eric Karlsson. So I thought it was his turn. But you're right, and everyone else was right. Cale Makar clearly is the best defenseman in the NHL. He showed it, getting the Hobie Baker in college, the Norris, the Conn Smythe, the Stanley Cup. I mean, it's been a great last 2 years for this guy, so happy for him on that. It's an odd awards show compared to some of the other ones. They crammed it in there during the Stanley Cup Finals, but happy for the winners, and the right people won, I think, in the end.
Now everybody turns their attention to, was it July 7th, the NHL draft?
Yep.
Shane Wright has to be going number one.
I think so.
I don't see how Montreal doesn't take him.
No, in Montreal too.
In Montreal, that. Yeah. Kingston's not far from Montreal, so that'll be good. And free agency kicks off July 13th. Looking forward to next year when they get back to the regular schedule and we have Canada Day as free agent frenzy day. Gives you something to keep an eye on as well. But
yeah, and the big free agent one for me, Johnny Gaudreau, what's going to happen there? I think that'll be the first kind of first domino to fall once they figure out, is Calgary re-signing him? Are they doing a sign and trade? Is he just saying, screw it, I want to get back to the East Coast, I'm leaving? I think whatever happens there, then you'll start to see other players shift around. There's going to be a lot of movement. It's going to be tough because there's no increase in the cap. So the money might not be thrown around like crazy. You might see it trickle into 2, 3, 4 days before some of these big names get signed, which sucks for the TV guys, but it should be a great, great free agency time.
So you would say Gaudreau being the first domino to fall, similar to like in the NFL, Aaron Rodgers. Once that was sorted, right, he was going back, yep, to, then all the other quarterbacks started going everywhere else. Okay.
Well, because he's going to set the bar of
right
what you're making and all that and what teams are willing to go after him. So if there's 3-4 teams going after Johnny Gaudreau, until he decides, then the teams that don't get him, then they go to their plan B, right? So that's where it's going to be interesting. Now, going into the Travelers, I was leading 123-96, and then I had Xander Schauffele win it for 10 points. I had Rory McIlroy, T19 for 1 point, but I had Burns, Day, and Spieth all miss the cut. Mike had Cantlay, who had a bad Sunday, T13 for 1 point, Scheffler, T13 for 1 point, and Simpson, T13 for 1 point. Pretty good streak on that. And Bradley, T19 for 1 point. Neiman missed the cut. So now I lead 134-100 going into one of the most interesting tournaments of the year. Sarcastically, the John Deere Classic. Mike, you always keep track of this. Who gets first pick?
It's me this week. I was going to say interesting in what sense? Daniel Berger.
I like it. Had a bit of a bad back this year, so he hasn't had the greatest year, but we're going 5-2, right, Mike? Mm-hmm.
5.
I'm going to pick the guy because, I mean, my heart was crushed for him yesterday. I'll go with Thigala as my first pick.
I'll go with our Canadian friend, Mr. Adam Hadwin.
Yeah, we need a Canadian win out there, don't you think?
We definitely do.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to go with Maverick McNealy.
Wow. I'm going to go with a guy, I picked him a lot, I like him, you like him, Jason Day.
Yep, good guy. Needs to start winning again. Oh, this is a tough board. I'll go with the guy who played good on Sunday. I'll go with the postman, JT Poston.
He's been good to me this year. Usually good for a point. Webb Simpson.
Get that sunscreen on, Webb. Whew. I will go with... I'll go with Cam Davis.
My last pick, I'm going to go with CT Pan.
Uh-huh. A little international flavor for you. I like it. Okay, I'll go with long bomb hitter who just hasn't lived up to his potential, Cameron Champ.
Could be the champ this week.
I love it. So I got Thigala, McNealy, Poston, Davis, Champ. Mike's got Berger, Hadwin, Day, Simpson, and Pan. Follow along all week. And we'll find out who is the leader next week. The game that we are most known for is coming up right after this break, so stick around. I know that all of you now send your friends would you rathers all the time in your group chats, just like Mike and I do. So let's dive into our DMs to see what we have this week in Would You Rather. Baseball had a massive brawl on Sunday between the Angels and Mariners. So Mike, would you rather be on the field when the brawl starts, or would you rather be the batter?
Rather be the batter. You have a good defense in your hands, but also a shorter distance to cover. If you're center field, you got to run a long way to get involved in the scuffle. So for the shorter travel distance, I'd rather be the batter.
Yeah, 99% of Major League Baseball bench-clearing brawls are boring, useless, a waste of time, and tough for some of these outfield or some of these bullpen guys who are hungover having to run all the way in. It's just a farce. But Sunday, this was a heated exchange between the Angels and Mariners, and these guys were just throwing bombs and haymakers, and it was literally like high school. Guys were like making a crowded circle or backing a circle up so the guys in the middle could get it on. It was something to see. But I think I want to be the batter because I'm the one starting it because I'm charging the mound. I'm the one coming at the pitcher with speed, and I know I better land my first one, and I better land it good because I got people jumping on my back really quick afterwards. And don't get yourself in a headlock via Nolan Ryan where he's giving you noogies on the top of your head. So make sure you land that first one clean and then get the hell out of there before your teammates come in.
I was more concerned about the distance I have to travel, but different priorities, I suppose.
Hey, to each their own, right?
Can I get a cart? Get the bullpen card. I want to go.
The bullpen card. What happened to that? All right, number two. Blue Jays pitcher Ryu underwent Tommy John surgery this week, which will put him out for at least 18 months. So would you rather have Tommy John surgery or ACL surgery on your knee?
I've had ACL surgery. It's a lengthy recovery, but typically if things go well, your return to action, speaking as an athlete,
of course, yep,
is quicker with an ACL, typically 6 to 9 months, depending. So for that reason, given that the rehab gets you back playing quicker, I would pick ACL. Not that I'm looking to have it again.
Yeah, I don't want either of these, to be honest with you. I'm going to say Tommy John. A lot of players, pitchers now, are getting Tommy John at a younger age to get it kind of out of the way. You've heard of guys 16, 17, 18, first year in single A, getting it done and actually coming back and pitching stronger and faster, just the way it's you're rehabbing and the rest you get and then the strength that's being able to build up around the elbow, the muscles around the elbow, make you actually pitch stronger. Gone are the days where Tommy John and then you're pretty much done. These guys are coming back and they're coming back to pitch great. Verlander's a great example. Even at an older age, if you get it, you can come back and pitch well. Who knows about Ryu? The problem with me with ACLs is I feel like knees, it's not just one time. You're right. Like, you know, once you have an ACL, does then the MCL go? Does it affect your other knee because you're leaning the other way or you're cutting with your other knee? It's just something that's too scary for me where I would be worried that during my retirement, I wouldn't be able to golf properly. So give me Tommy John and I'll be able to throw it a couple extra miles on my fastball. Us amateurs can never get all of our golf game working at the same time. So would you rather be blasting it off the tee down the middle or would you rather have your short game dialed in?
I think the short game is the more important. You know, if you can hit it somewhat decently and keep it straight, you put yourself in good position to score. If you get on the green and you're all over the shop, like I have been recently, it's not going to go well. So I think, you know, like they say, drive for show, putt for dough. Even if you hit on and you got a 20 footer, but you can keep it close or maybe hit a few of those, it makes a significant difference. And then not even touching the chipping aspect or the inside 50, 60 yards. So the short game is key.
For me, it's a short game as well. I'd rather be dialed in on my short game. That's knowing, you know, the course that I usually play at, the layout and all that. You can, most courses, I mean, unless you're playing the US Open, you can get away with being a little bit in the rough or being off to the side. And then you just need to make the smart decisions. And sometimes on a par four, it's better to find your number and hit it to it. Get it into that 80-yard range. And if you got that wedge dialed in, you can stick it tight and have a decent look at par. And it takes away from the, you know, the triples, the doubles, whatever you don't want to get. driving it down the middle can be great, but if you're chunking it up and down the fairway till you finally get to the green and then going over and then back over and then two putt and then miss the tap in, that's a tough way to play a round of golf. So for me, I'll take the dialed in short game. Number four, last year, all we talked about was young quarterbacks in the NFL, and now they'll be going into their second years. So would you rather have Trevor Lawrence or would you rather have Mac Jones this season?
We're just looking at these solely as individuals, not their teams or yes. whatever. Okay.
You, if you started the Mike Mazzaro Packers organization today, which one of these guys would you want as your quarterback?
Probably have a better name, but Trevor Lawrence. I think there's more upside there. To touch on the team aspect, I think with Doug Peterson coming in, a coaching change, an offensive change, I think that will help really unlock more of what he's capable of doing. Taking nothing away from Mac Jones. Mac Jones is a solid quarterback and will have a good career, but I would take Trevor Lawrence. I think we'll see more from him this year and year two.
I agree with you. It's Trevor Lawrence. Like, let's remember what he was doing 3 years ago in college and slinging the ball, and he's never really had any adversity. So now he's got a little bit, and he finally got rid of Urban Meyer, and he's kind of starting fresh again, and maybe this will be the year where he really takes that step forward. A lot of these great quarterbacks, Peyton Manning included, have bad first years. So I think that he's going to be the guy that's going to excel, and in 5-6 years, everyone's going to say, yeah, he's definitely the best quarterback from that young crop coming up. So I would definitely take Trevor Lawrence, absolute stud. Nothing against Mac Jones. He could turn out to be the Tom Brady of this generation in the next 20 years, but he's got a lot more things going for him being part of that Patriots organization right now. So strip that all away. I like Trevor Lawrence. Number five, there are still some veteran quarterbacks trying to hang on to jobs. So would you rather have Carson Wentz or would you rather have Jimmy Garoppolo?
I would take Jimmy G. Now, he's coming off shoulder surgery this year, but I think Jimmy has been more consistent year in, year out over the course of his career as compared to Carson. His teammates seem to love him. Not saying that Carson isn't loved by his teammates, but Jimmy, for me, ultimate team guy, you know, seems like a real leader. He's played on two very successful franchises, part of the Patriots organization that won a couple Super Bowls with him as the number two guy, and into San Francisco, where he has had success with Kyle Shanahan. I think in a good system that can highlight a lot of his, the things that he does well, I think can be very beneficial. So I would take Jimmy Garoppolo.
This one, I kind of don't want either of them. But if I had to pick one, I'm going to pick Jimmy G as well. Let's remember he was in the Super Bowl not too long ago. He can win. He's a guy that is liked, as you mentioned, and that's important, and he can lead. Carson Wentz is a guy that just, I don't know if it's injuries, lack of confidence, but so much has changed in his career since that miraculous year that he had helping his team with the Eagles, and then he gets hurt and they go on to win the Super Bowl. Like, you feel bad for the guy just being on the sidelines, and it's never been good since then. Hasn't been able to recover. I just think this is kind of the end of the road for Carson Wentz. He's bounced around so much now that it's just going to be tough for him to ever be the number one guy with a team. I think Jimmy G can still be the number one guy. Maybe it might not be in San Francisco much more, but at least there's a little bit more upside, a little bit more juice left out of him. So I'll take Jimmy G. Last one, number six. A couple players that are maybe not liked in their dressing rooms are looking to move to new teams next year. So I ask you, would you rather have on your team Kyrie Irving or would you rather have Evander Kane?
I would say Evander Kane. I think he has produced significantly everywhere he's went. It seemed like a good fit in Edmonton. 39 points in 43 games there at the latter part of the regular season. And a big contributor in the playoffs. 17 points, 15 games, had the hat trick there. And was really playing well. So, you know, I think he's a good player. And if he's not in Edmonton, I think you know, some team is going to benefit from having him.
This is another tough one because these guys, from all indications, are not liked in their dressing room whatsoever by anyone. At least with basketball, there's only, what, 11 guys on the roster and not 25, 30 in the NHL. Ugh. I guess I'm going to take Kyrie Irving here only because he is such a special player. Such a special player. And he's shown it. He's shown he can win. And I don't know if it's Brooklyn per se or just there was the COVID stuff. It was compounded there. It was never a good fit for him. Maybe the Lakers being kind of under LeBron again, realizing, hey, what I had in Cleveland was good, might be the right fit for him. He's not a number one guy, so he's not going to be the number one guy anywhere. It's finding the right spot for him. Evander Kane, yeah, with McDavid, at a great end of the year here with Edmonton, but he's going to get paid, and he's going to go somewhere else, and he's going to be expected to be a top-line guy and somewhat of a leader, and it's going to be a disastrous end for Kane again. I can see the writing on the wall. So I'm going to take Kyrie Irving because he could end up in a new team and make it to the NBA Finals and win, and you would not be surprised he is that good. Now, each week, Mike and I will give you our best bet of the week to help you make some cash. Last week, I had the Yankees beating the Astros in game one of their series, and they did just that, scoring four runs in the bottom of the ninth to walk off for the win. Mike took the Stampeders on the money line at minus 900, and that barely won. So I get to keep the tee, and we'll give you another winner. And this is a lock of locks. This Friday is Canada Day, and the Jays always play at home in the afternoon in their red jerseys and red ball caps. This year, they're playing the red hot Rays, who are now tied with the Jays in the standings. But this team does not lose on Canada Day, and those Reds with 40,000 screaming fans getting after it on a holiday Friday, take the Blue Jays on the money line for the win.
I'm going to stick with Canada Day as well. Battle of 0-3 teams on the gridiron. The Edmonton Elks travel to Steel Town to play the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Hamilton should not be 0-3, but anywho, Tiger Cats on the money line to get the first win of the battle of 0-3 teams.
Wow. It's a good pick. Hot on the CFL.
Always.
Well, listen up, fans and listeners of Jabbo. This is our 50th show that we have done, and it's been about 2 years now that we've been doing it, a year and a half, and we've loved every minute of it. However, sadly, this will be our last show. Mike and I have decided to take the summer off and then maybe move on to some new adventures and try some new things. So this will be the end of Just a Bit Outside.
Oh, you have nothing else? Not like a thank you, Mike? Okay. No, but look, in all honesty, yes, it's been enjoyable. A couple of very important thank yous to Clay Hansler, you know, who without him, we wouldn't have had this opportunity to give this a shot. So Clay, we certainly appreciate all you've done for us. Dylan Wilson as well, who was our early episode producer and really set us on the course, sounding properly with the right equipment, and making sure it was all fine tuned. And then massive thank you to Greg Fillion, who has been our producer, big part of the show, important part of the show, and has done a lot of tremendous work for us behind the scenes. So thank you to those three gentlemen. Thank you to you, Stark, and it's been a blast.
Yeah, I did have a thank you for you, Mike. I was going to get to it. So, Mike, thank you. You are awesome. You are a great friend. Our sports chats will continue on just a little bit more private, which will be great. So thank you for going on this road with me. It was a blast to talk to you every Monday night and talk about everything sports and have an outlet to discuss and give this podcast thing a try. So thank you, Mike. I really enjoy it. We also don't know what's going to happen next, but I want to say thank you to all the listeners who have supported us and have enjoyed hearing us talk sports, which is what we love to do. So thank you to all of you guys and really enjoying this experience with us. So we really do appreciate it. And as always, clear eyes,
full hearts,
can't lose.
Oh, yeah.